We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Beaver Sports Podcast, brought to you by Hong Kombucha, handcrafted with love in Bend, Oregon for Beaver Nation. Here are your hosts, Mike Parker and John Warren.
John, we have had some excellent podcasts and guests in the past year plus, but I'm not sure, given the circumstances, the magnitude of the event, twofold for us and our purposes.
Yeah.
The 50th anniversary of the famous Mexico City Olympiad, marked by the protests of John Carlos and Tommy Smith. We actually spoke on our local show, the Joe Beaver Show, with Ernie Smith, Tommy's brother, who was a teammate of our podcast guest this week, the great Dick Fosbury. During that volatile time in the world, on campus at Oregon State, on campuses and throughout our country in that time period, we had a chance to talk to Dick Fosbury, which for me, given all of that, was, it's just been a
fascinating,
educational, informative, inspiring, just a lot of different aspects to it.
What's amazing about it, we've had several conversations this week, like we say on our local show. Each time we talk with someone, we learn something new that the others didn't know, or all these different aspects about that Olympiad, about the training, about all aspects of the whole story with Dick Fosbury.
There are so many elements to it. We recommend now Bob Welch's book, which is the authoritative, thorough, in-depth version of all the events from Dick Fosbury's growing up, a tragic bicycle accident with his brother that Dick alludes to in this conversation that set him on a path that ultimately led to maybe even as much joy to have a bicycle path opened in Ketchum, Idaho, that he helped drive, a safe place for bicycles that was something that was on his heart from a very young age. So we're really excited to get into this week's edition of the Beaver Sports Podcast, which
That's not all we're excited about.
No, absolutely. We thank the folks who make Hum Kombucha, handcrafted with love in Bend, Oregon, for all of Beaver Nation. And they have sent us some samples. I am enjoying the blueberry mint edition of Hum Kombucha. It's very good, by the way.
It's very good. I actually am halfway through the hop grapefruit. I actually like grapefruit taste. I know that's strange to some people. 2 billion probiotic cultures. This is like one of those things that is so good for you. While it tastes good, at the same time, it tastes great. It's also like freakishly good for you, they say. So Hum Kombucha, we're really, really pleased that the folks at Hum Kombucha dropped some of this stuff by so we could not only taste it. I mean, we have it on our own.
What
but at the same time, we talk about the different flavors. Mango passion fruit. And then, of course, I've got hop grapefruit that
coconut,
I'm drinking.
Coconut lime. And I'm enjoying the delicious blueberry mint. So, again, keep it coming. Handcrafted with love. And Ben, with what, as John mentioned, the antioxidants, the probiotics, all organic ingredients. Fizzy and delicious. Hum Kombucha. Making the Beaver Sports podcast possible. And John, is just before we dive into the conversation with Dick Fosbury, know that at 4 o'clock Friday of homecoming week, the unveiling of Ellen Tykeson's statue, the sculpture of Dick at 7 feet 4 1/4 inch. Mm-hmm. That will be in front of Dixon Rec, the site of Old Bell Field. A lot of folks, of course, coming back to campus. A lot of folks coming into Corvallis this weekend.
Well, especially for Hall of Fame, homecoming, football, all that, and Dick Fosbury, our guest. Experience Beaver Game Day fun live in Corvallis and extend your stay to take in all the Willamette Valley has to offer. Visit Corvallis, come for the game and stay to play. And we have a number of sponsors this year that are new, and they've been with us all season long and will be all the way through towards hopefully the end of baseball that goes into June, just like last year, including the Heat Pump Store. Your local ductless heating and cooling experts. Join the ductless revolution. We're very thankful for our sponsors.
And speaking of a ductless revolution, a revolution in a technique, the one-man revolution invented by our podcast guest. Let's get into it now with the great Dick Fosbury. An anniversary in this 50th anniversary of the Mexico City Olympiad. We're going to talk about that with our own legendary Dick Fosbury, kind enough to join us just landing in Mexico City for an anniversary get-together there. Dick, thanks for taking time for us, and tell us what's going on today and the next couple of days in Mexico City.
Hey, you guys, great to talk to you. Yeah, this is how my reunion month starts, is going to Mexico City, where it all began. The Mexican Committee has invited us down as guests, and so I'm down here with a small contingent of other U.S. athletes, like Debbie Myers, the triple gold medalist in swimming from Sacramento. She was only 16 at the time. Mike Burton, another gold medalist swimmer. My teammates, Bob Segrin in the pole vault, and a guy named Bob Beeman in the long jump. And then from Italy, we've got Klaus DiBiase, the diver. And we're going to have a really nice, fun 3 days, some ceremonies, and visiting the people, touring the city, and going to the stadium and to the swimming pool. So I'm really excited to be back to Mexico City, and the weather's nice, so I'm happy.
When you say that's, you use the phrase where it all began, but of course, as you well know and we know, that was in a very real sense the zenith, the culmination to get to the gold at 7 4 1/4. The story of getting there is so eloquently told by Bob Welch in the outstanding book, The Wizard of Foz, about yourself. We've interviewed Bob. I've read the book. I love the story. So when you say it all began there, in a very real sense, Dick, that's true. But in another sense, it began long before that. I know we don't have time to go through the whole book and story, but where for you, this incredible journey, Dick, where do you feel like its beginnings really are?
Well, you're exactly right. From my perspective, when I say here's where it all began, this is where the revolution began, where all the kids watched me jumping backwards over the bar, and they thought that was so cool. They all wanted to try it. So this was really the beginning of the revolution. But of course, you know, changing my technique. I did it at a rotary track meet in Grants Pass. 1963, which is 55 years ago. And it took a couple years to develop when I was at Medford High School, being a black tornado, and then coming on to Oregon State and coached by Bernie Wagner, and competing with a couple of teammates, Steve Kelly and John Radetich. Those guys were so competitive, we all pushed each other, and that's what really motivated me to focus on training and eventually reach the elite level.
Dick, when you mentioned Bernie, one of the fascinating among so many parts of the story that intrigued me was a bit of a handshake agreement that you came to with Bernie about developing your new technique. He still wasn't fully sold on it, even after he had recruited you and you came here. Tell us a little bit about the understanding you had with Bernie and when he finally came aboard on your style altogether.
Well, you know, he wasn't the only one that was a bit skeptical. Everybody was skeptical because I was a one-off and just an anomaly. And Bernie was the first guy that was really a very good high jump coach. I was coached by head coach Dean Benson, who was a champion hurdler, and then Fred Spiegelberg was the assistant coach, and Spieg was out there every day in high school. But it wasn't really till I got to Oregon State, and just for the record, I came to Oregon State to study engineering. That was number one, but as I had a really good performance, won a national high school championship that summer, that kind of put me on the map, and that's when Bernie gave me a partial scholarship. And Bernie was a smart guy. He was a Navy grad and went to Stanford, and he just wasn't sure. He questioned the efficiency of my technique, so I constantly had to prove it over and over again. And he asked me what my goals were, and I said I want to be the best that I can be. And so he proposed that I practice the straddle technique, which was the classic in those days, every day, but I could use my technique and use it to score points. So, you know, it was a good compromise, and it worked until my sophomore year when I broke the school record and improved my best by 3 inches at a spring track meet down in California. And that's where we ended plan A and went to plan B.
Yeah.
But he was a smart coach.
Yeah, and smart enough, when you went 6'10 at that meet that you're referring to at Fresno State, in the book, you're quoted as saying, that jump was my salvation with Bernie. In other words, he saw you set a school record using your, quote, flop technique that didn't even have an official name at that point, but that won him over. That skepticism that you met with along the way, Dick, even when you talk about that meet in Grants Pass in 1963, I found it interesting that Bob Welch recounts the story that your coach, Dean Benson, after that meet, you said to yourself in midair, raise your butt, stupid, and somehow the flop was born. Take us through that moment a little bit and how Coach Benson reacted that day, April 20th, 1963.
Well, everybody was skeptical because up until that time, I had Dean and Spieg had been trying to teach me to straddle, and I was horrible. Finishing, I'd usually be the first one out in every competition, so I was really desperate, and I lost my confidence, and so I asked Dean if I could go back to the scissors. He said, well, don't give up trying to learn, but it's your decision, because in reality, he had nothing to lose. And in that meet, I cleared my best, and which was 5'4". And I was going for 5'6". I'd never made it before, and I was desperate to get over the bar, and I knew I had to do something different. So trying to get my rear end up, lift my hips, I got my body out of the way by leaning back a little bit, and it worked. And then they raised the bar to 5'8", and I thought, okay, you know, just lean back further, and I made 5'8", and eventually peaked out at 5'10", improving a half a foot in that one day, changing my body position from sitting over the bar to a back layout, and I was just upside down from everybody else.
Dick, this is John Warren. A half a foot in one day would sell any coach, one would think. That's incredible. I mean,
That's a breakout.
That's incredible. I'm curious about how much the rest of the world, the top-notch jumpers of the time, were you aware? Now, granted, this was before the internet and social media and even a lot of the sports shows, all the sports shows, in fact, on TV, but were you aware? Were you hearing anything from overseas jumpers, all these different people, and how slow or how long did it take for everyone to kind of embrace what you came up with?
Well, there was nobody that was convinced until after my victory in Mexico, and 1968 was another breakout year. I improved five and a half inches from my sophomore year through my junior year to the Olympic Games. So until then, nobody was using this style to my knowledge, although I had seen a young girl in 1966, Debbie Brill from Vancouver, who had her own technique jumping backwards over the bar. But I had never seen anyone else ever even try it. And so I know that I was the only one using the style, me and Debbie Brill, and then there was a kid from Montana, but he quit jumping after high school, and so nobody ever heard of him. So, that's why Mexico City was the beginning of the revolution.
Mm-hmm. Is there a movie in this? I mean, seriously. Because it can culminate, obviously, with Mexico, but I think of the Prefontaine movie, which was done very well, and some other movies. I know that it took a while to get this first book, which I hear is tremendous, but there must be, have you been approached at all by anybody?
No, but you're exactly right. Both Bob and I believe we put this in the right hands of a good screenwriter, and it'll make a good film. So, time will develop. And we're very excited about it, but it's really a good story and a story of survival and personal tragedy with my mm-hmm. family growing up in Medford, and those were very, very difficult times. But, it's because you're exactly right, because there was no social media back in those days, nobody ever talked about that part of my life and that part of my background until I sat down with Bob and started going over, some of the history of my youth.
And Dick, that is so well told. I was not aware, and it sounds like a lot of people, who have known of your development of the technique, not aware of the tragedy that you allude to in losing your brother in a bicycle accident. So it's poignant to me that the book that you and Bob collaborated on ends with the pride you took in getting a bicycle trail in honor of your brother in Ketchum, Idaho, correct? I mean, isn't that so? For you, it almost feels like that's a culmination of this story.
No, it's true irony and circumstances that I was hired by the rec district in Blaine County to design our bike path, and I of course borrowed the idea of Priest Trail, took that from Eugene to Ketchum Sun Valley Resort, and designing a separated Class 1 multi-use trail, which is our bike path, which was a great circumstance for me to be able to provide safety for all of the residents and the tourists that come to the valley. So it was a double blessing.
Yeah. Hey, Dick, the reason, too, that there's so much here, why John is right in asking about a movie, is not only your own story and the development of a technique that revolutionized a sport, but the social ferment, right. The social ferment in the time, and the fact that you're in Mexico City 50 years later. Tim Layden, who will be a guest of ours next week, next Tuesday, from Sports.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that story, you're quoted in it. I thought, I don't know if you've read the story yet, Dick, or not, but Tim Layden did a tremendous job talking about Tommy Smith and John Carlos, Tommy's brother, of course. Ernie, who will join us Monday, was the captain and your teammate at Oregon State. I thought Tim Layden's story was well done, didn't you think?
Yeah, I did. He, you know, and I know Tommy and John really well. We've talked this week. Tommy was actually already down here, but he had an engagement tomorrow in London. So I missed Tommy, and John is in Chicago. And, you know, we're traveling all over the place celebrating our 50th. But I know those guys. I've come to know them really well, and they really suffered for so many years, and today they're excellent spokespersons. Both of them are educators, and I just think the world of them. And now it's just this week I read it's been announced that in Australia they're doing a statue of Greg Norman. So you know that was just such an iconic moment. And Greg was part of the Olympic movement for human rights. So it was a time of revolution in our culture and society, and we're in the Vietnam War, and we had assassinations in 1968 with Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, and there was such turmoil that was going on.
Dick, and the Echo Summit experience, too. We haven't even touched on that. And again, time fails. People should read the book. But you actually took Bob Welch to the very spot, right, where you had to, you thought you'd made the team in Los Angeles, and you had to kind of make it again. The drama in that, I was nervous reading about it because I thought, boy, I hope he makes it. I knew you did because you won the gold. But that was there was some high tension in that at Echo Summit, wasn't there?
No, I was really shook up because, you know, promises. In order to raise the level of competition, the Olympic Committee announced that the winners in the L.A. trials in the L.A. Coliseum in July would make the team, and then they would select the final two athletes in the final trials. And I had to go there with Bob and walk that because for an Oregon kid, it was really a mythical place. Mm-hmm. Now I hope the call is not dropped because we're going under a tunnel. Can you hear me?
I can still hear you, Dick. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're just coming out. But listen, the Bill Bowerman was hired by the Olympic Committee to find a location for a training site at the same elevation as Mexico City. He looked all over the United States and found this flat area in the mountains that was a small ski hill, and they got a temporary permit from the Forest Service to develop a world-class facility, tartan surface. It was amazing, but it was carved out of the forest because the Forest Service required that they minimize the impact to the forest. So, for an Oregon kid to come to a track that is carved out of the middle of the forest, and there were trees and boulders on the infield. I mean, it was just a mythical place,
yeah.
And
yeah,
it resulted in the finest team we've ever had, training with each other and competing against each other for 2 months at a great result.
Dick, we're going to. I know you have ceremonial things and tours and reunion festivities in Mexico City. I want to close with a thought about next week. We're going to have a book signing with Bob in your hometown of Medford, and then on Friday, At 3:30, it's my understanding, out in front of Dixon Recreation, you and Bob will have copies of The Wizard of Oz. You'll be selling and signing in front of Dixon Rec. And at 4 o'clock, the unveiling of a statue set at 7 feet 4 1/4 inch, of a bronze statue. I'm just wondering, Dick, what this means to you to come back home 50 years later, almost to the day of the jump, to have a kind of an event. You, who knows how you're going to feel about it? We're not there yet. But what are your thoughts about next Friday in front of Dixon Rec, the site of a lot of your jumps at Old Bell Field?
Yeah, it's, you know, that's right outside Bell Field where we competed and used to beat the Ducks. Hey.
Yeah, go Beavs.
It's amazing. I'm so excited because the sculptor, Ellen Tygeson, has done an amazingly creative, innovative job of designing this, because a lot of athletes, of course, whether they're running or standing, they're on the ground. I'm going to be floating in the air over the bar set at 7'4". So this is a one-of-a-kind artistic statue that is going to be so memorable. And I'm really honored that as the first athlete, the Oregon State selected it, a track guy. It's part of our 150th centennial, and I can't wait to see all my friends and see the students there at Oregon State, and then the Hall of Fame afterwards. I mean, it's going to be a fantastic weekend.
Dick, I want to go back real quick. Quick question. I haven't read the book. Was Bill Bowerman the 68 coach? And then what was that like? Did he ever have conversation with you about, you know, you not going there and you ended up at Oregon State with your abilities?
Well, you know, yeah, that's a whole story. Bill was actually the assistant coach. The head coach was the Stanford coach, whose name I'm blanking on. It'll come to me. But, you know, Bill, it's well known that Bill was not a great recruiter. He felt that kids that wanted to come to Oregon, he would accept them on the track team if they were good enough. And I got a telegram inviting me to come to University of Oregon for a visit, which I appreciated, even though my name was misspelled. but it listened to be recruited and invited by Bill Bowerman. I've still got the telegram. I was going to Oregon State for engineering, and so I'd already made my mind up. There was only one place for me to go, and that was to follow my dream of becoming an engineer. So, I have the highest respect for Bill Bowerman. Who doesn't? He was an innovator himself, an inventor, and a hell of a motivator, as we all know.
The letter, by the way, was to Dick Forsby, F-O-U-R-S-B-Y, that Bowerman wrote, according to Bob Welch's book, to Dick Forsby. And you were later referred to as Bill Fosbury in a cut line in a San Francisco Chronicle article. But everybody not long thereafter got to know and properly spell the great Dick Fosbury. I will say of Bill Bowerman, in the book, he's quoted as telling Bob Shepard, an Oregon high jumper, the following: when you think about it, referring to your style, it's a very efficient way to jump. So at least Bill Bowerman recognized what you were doing made sense. That must mean something to you, Dick.
Well, yeah, and of course he didn't say that to me, but you know, everybody that saw me jump could see that you know, there was something in the way that I had added speed in my approach and had a very smooth takeoff and clearance over the bar. And, it developed, and I got on a great training program that Bernie put me on with our throwers on the team, Steve Biatramont and Tim Vollmer. Once I dedicated myself, the results really showed up.
Thank you so much for your time today, Dick. We hope you have a wonderful time in Mexico City, and we look forward to seeing you back here. Real pleasure to talk to you. Congratulations on all of these well-deserved accolades, and thank you for taking time for us, Dick. We appreciate it.
Wow, what a fascinating conversation with Dick Fosbury. How often do you actually meet someone or talk with someone who literally reinvented the wheel? It never happens. One thing is, I mentioned this earlier in the open, that we learned a lot at different points during the week after talking with Dick. We got a phone call afterward that kind of connected to a couple of other things here locally that was fascinating.
John, it really was, and I was so pleased. We were amazed to get a postscript to that conversation with Dick Fosbury from Tom Huggins, who went on to be a member of the track and field and cross-country teams at Oregon State. All of that conversation about Echo Summit that we had with Dick, Tom and a buddy of his by the name of Steve Prefontaine, and a couple of others, Tom regaled us with an anecdote. They drove down from Coos Bay to take in those trials at Echo Summit near Tahoe. And Tom underscored exactly what Dick talked about, what an incredible place it was, and how one day they got there, didn't have tickets to get in, so they just did an end around and sneaked in through the forest.
I love that. And what you were mentioning, some other famous people who were just starting their careers down there.
Dick Ebersol was a 21-year-old running film from Echo Summit into Lake Tahoe to the big TV stations. Jeff Hollister had a little business going. I think you had Puma and Adidas, the primary shoe sponsor, so to speak. But there was a guy named Jeff Hollister with shoes out of the back of his trunk that he was attempting to sell, a company named Blue Ribbon Sports.
Now, why was it Hollister? Why wasn't it other guy?
Yeah, well, Jeff Hollister was working that event for Blue Ribbon Sports, which eventually, after a swoosh,
Nike
became known as Nike.
And that's actually, over the years, you hear these stories about, selling shoes out of the back of a truck. Well, that was actually literally happening.
So all of that, part of this week's sports podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Both Tom Huggins and Dick Fosbury, and we know, all of you know, that being a Beaver has its perks. They use their education to greatness in their own careers. Oregon State graduates are already qualified for a scholarship towards earning an MBA from OSU. In Portland, in Bend, thank you, Hum Kombucha, in Bend, Corvallis, or online, flexible and customized options will help advance your career trajectory. Visit mba.oregonstate.edu/beaver. Do it today. Well, John, that was a lot of fun.
That was fun, and we appreciate Hum Kombucha. I'm going to open up the mango passion fruit. Let's see if you hear it.
It sounds good.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds good. It's going to taste even better. We want to thank all of you for joining us this week, and we'll do it again after what we hope will be an inspiring homecoming weekend. The Beavers and Cal at Center Stage, Hall of Fame weekend, the statue for Dick Fosbury. It's going to be hard to top that, but we'll be back again for another edition of the Beaver Sports Podcast next week. So long, everybody.
This has been the Beaver Sports Podcast, brought to you by Hum Kombucha, handcrafted with love in Bend, Oregon, for Beaver Nation. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.